Well, good evening. I'm glad to be here today. I don't know if Lauren mentioned to y'all, her mom, my mother-in-law, and Lauren and I are all together, You Are My Treasure, which is this slide. So we enjoy presenting together, and when we can't, we kind of go our own way, but we really enjoy presenting together. So I'm glad to be here with y'all tonight. And we're just going to kind of continue on. I know Lauren spent some time talking about the brain, and that'll factor in, and giving her testimony. And so today we're going to talk, or tonight, we're going to talk about training and teaching our children what to do and some practical explanations with that. So let me go ahead and put this down and get situated for a second. Okay, we're I'm usually pretty interactive, so if y'all have any questions, feel free to pop up and ask them at any time. So tonight, like I said, we're going to talk about training and how to do that with our little ones. So we always want to start back with Scripture first and see, what does the Bible say about training? And so I'm going to read Deuteronomy 6 to you. It says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart." So this is a common verse that a lot of us know about parenting. We kind of go back to this Deuteronomy verse. But it's very important. Look at the end. It says, "I command you today that these words shall be on your heart." And so it starts with us. And we understand that in order for us to teach these things of the Lord to our children, that they have to be in our heart as well. And if we're abiding in him, then we'll be able to make the shift over to teach our children the same things. The latter part of the verse is, "You shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." And so two words really stick out to me about this verse, and one is diligently. So the Lord was very clear from the very beginning that this child-raising process that we're all in together is not necessarily going to be easy. He's saying that diligently you're going to have to do this as you go along the way, as you walk, as you sit down, as you rise up. And the next part is just doing it day by day and making sure that it's a part of our life as we walk in, as we're working together. So when we look at the Hebrew, to teach is to inoculate and to train God's word and God's standards into the child intensively and with repetition. So we see that it can't be just something. Wouldn't it be great if you say, okay, this is what we're going to do. Next time you need something, you're going to say, "Mommy, may I have this, please?" And then they just know it. That would be a perfect world. But we have to inoculate with them that with this training, day by day, purposely, every time. And the next definition is to teach an intensive drill like a soldier training to war. And so that's important to remember. You know, when we have our soldiers, they don't go off for a few days of training and come back and then we send them off to battle. It's day by day. They do the same drills over and over. It's very repetitive. It's very exhausting. And then they're ready for battle. And that's what we're doing with our children. We're training them day by day in what to do so that when we send them out, they have the skills that are necessary to be successful. So even the dictionary says to teach a particular skill or behavior over time with repetition is what teaching is. And so a lot of times, especially in this culture nowadays, we'll have a lot of quick fixes. If you look on Pinterest, a lot of times there'll be articles and it'll say 3 easy steps to an obedient child, or how many of you have seen these? Or 5 words to say to build godly character into your children. And you're like, wow, I did not know it was that easy. Because you look back to the Deuteronomy verse and that's not what it says. But if you look at Pinterest, it's very easy. So just understanding that that is not the reality. We are sinful people raising sinful children in a sinful world. It's going to take a lot of time, a lot of training, a lot of repetition, and it's not going to be easy all the time, but it's very important that we maintain that mindset with them, that we can do this just with a lot of repetition and training. So scientists have a term called neuroplasticity. Has anyone heard of this term? It just means basically that we can learn new things. We're capable, our brains are neuroplastic, which means they can change, and we're capable of learning new things. So our brains start to firm up at about 8 years of age, but until then, a child's brain is extremely neuroplastic. And so if I just took a brain and put it right here, those little grooves that you see on the brain are actual learning that has occurred in your brain. It's a connection and a neuropathway that you've made. So we all have those neuropathways. So let's say that before you're a parent, every time something, say you stub your toe when you're walking and you say, oh, crap, and that's what you say. Then you become a parent and you're like, I don't want to say that anymore. From now on, I'm going to say, oh, man. And so first few times that you stub your toe, what's going to come out of your mouth? The same thing that you've used to. You have a neural pathway. Something happened. I was triggered. This is my reaction. And that's your neural pathway. So in order to build a new neural pathway in your brain, you have to do it just like we were talking before, with a lot of repetition and understanding that the first few times, it may not be exactly what you want to come out of your mouth. But then with that repetition, you'll retrain your brain. So it's like that with our little ones. We have the little two-year-old, and every time they want a toy from the other little two-year-old, they walk over and hit them because they have a neural pathway in their brain at that point that says, I want something, I hit you. I want something, I hit you. So you're coming along beside them and saying, you want something. You put your hand and say, may I have a turn, please? And you practice it. So it's not going to happen the first time that they walk over and put their hand on them and say, may I have a turn, please? But with repetition over time, we're creating new neural pathways in their brain. So that's the science behind it, the constant practicing. We know that the Bible already told us that that's what we're going to do, but the science is also telling us that that's what we have to do. So Ephesians 6:4 says, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And this is such an important verse to talk about what we're to do. We're supposed to bring them up with that discipline and that constant instruction and the role that the fathers play in that as well. I heard this Sunday our pastor was talking about discipline with our children, and he brought up something I really loved. We all know the verse that the anger of men does not achieve the righteousness of God. And a lot of times you have a little person in front of you who's triggered you, and now you're angry, and you think, okay, in order to change your behavior, this is what I'm going to do. And it comes forth out of anger. And we've all known that you're not supposed to discipline in anger, but sometimes we have a tendency to do that. So my pastor just said, we don't discipline in anger, like we know, but we do want to discipline out of anguish. So we want to understand that that is a sinful behavior, and we want to bring that under the authority of the Lord and teach them to bring that negative behavior that's sinful under the authority of the Lord. And so out of our anguish of that sin, we come before it to come and say, listen, that was not the right thing to do. That was a sin against God. It was hurtful to other people, and this is what we're going to do. Just today, my husband was telling me, he was reading this morning about John the Baptist, and he said it really hit home to him because, you know, John the Baptist came to prepare the way for Jesus and to point others to Jesus. That was his calling in life. And you think about us as parents, and isn't that our calling with our little ones? To prepare the way and to point them to Jesus. And John the Baptist did that with preaching repentance to them. So if we come and we understand it with the anguish of the sin and not the anger, that we're turning them and pointing their little hearts to repentance and to reconciliation with the Lord, then we understand how important that discipline and that instruction is for them. So teaching these things has to be on our hearts first. Like we were saying, the word has to be in us first, but also when we're coming and we're saying, when you're triggered, when you're angry, this is how you're going to do it. We have to just model that for them. Well, what happens when we're triggered and when we're angry? We all see the little three-year-old that can throw a temper tantrum, but as adults, we do that too. It looks different. It might look like peeling out of the driveway. It might look like the silent treatment. It might look different ways, but we have our own adult's version of a temper tantrum. So bringing ourselves under the authority of the Lord is important too. an understanding, calming ourselves. I've heard it put before, when you're on an airplane and the gas masks fall out, what do they say? To put it on yourself first and then to attend those around you. So it's the same kind of thing. We have to calm ourselves first and then we can attend to those around us. The hard part is when you have your own children, it's deeply personal, isn't it? So I remember being a teacher for a lot of years, and there would be a conflict, and the little kid would come up, and I felt like I could be, you know, Lauren talked about the brain states, and I could be in my executive state in my brain and solve this little conflict with this child, and I felt great, and I was like, this is going to be awesome. So how many of you were perfect parents before you had children? So that was, yes, that was me. And so I was like, so my child is going to know because I'm going to teach them and I'm going to train them and they're going to know. But then the Lord blessed me with twins, and all that went out the window. So I realized very quickly, my daughter's a girl, obviously, but she's a very emotional girl. And then I have a boy. She has a twin brother. So when I would try to discipline her when she was little, I noticed myself, I would think, I'm up here in my executive state, and I'm telling her, you're angry right now. When you're angry, this is what you're going to do. But really, in my head, I was in my emotional state, and I was thinking, I have told you this, here we go again, here we go again, another fifth fit of the day, I've told you what to do when you do this, I've told you every day. But the reality is, yes, I have told her probably 10 times that day, and I have told her that ever since she was born, but she still didn't have a skill. So it's important for us to realize when we're triggered to calm ourselves and realize that there is a skill that this child may not have and does not have if they're still showing that behavior. And you may think, I've told you over and over, but the reality is they still don't understand. They still don't have that skill. And so it's our job to keep teaching and keep training. I'm going to show a little video that talks about how that might look, you know, in our world, how it might look for them to be learning this new skill and some of the challenges that can come with that and understanding that where they're coming from when they're learning all of this.
Hey, it's me, Destin. Welcome back to Smarter Every Day. You've heard people say it's just like riding a bike, meaning it's really easy and you can't forget how to do it, right? But I did something. I did something that damaged my mind. It happened on the streets of Amsterdam, and I got really scared, honestly. I can't ride a bike like you can anymore. Before I show you the video of what happened, I need to tell you the backstory. Like many six-year-olds with a MacGyver mullet, I learned how to ride a bike when I was really young. I had learned a life skill, and I was really proud of it. Everything changed, though, when my friend Barney called me 25 years later. Where I work, the welders are geniuses, and they like to play jokes on the engineers. He had a challenge for me. He had built a special bicycle and he wanted me to try to ride it. He had only changed one thing. When you turn the handlebar to the left, the wheel goes to the right. When you turn it to the right, the wheel goes to the left. I thought this would be easy, so I hopped on the bike ready to demonstrate how quickly I could conquer this.
And here he is, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Destin Sandlin. First attempt riding the bicycle.
Couldn't do it. You can see that I'm laughing, but I'm actually really frustrated. In this moment, I had a really deep revelation. My thinking was in a rut. This bike revealed a very deep truth to me. I had the knowledge of how to operate the bike, but I did not have the understanding. Therefore, knowledge is not understanding. Look, I know what you're probably thinking. Destin's probably just an uncoordinated engineer and can't do it. But that's not the case at all. The algorithm that's associated with riding a bike in your brain is just that complicated. Think about it. Downwards force on the pedals, leaning your whole body, pulling and pushing the handlebars, gyroscopic precession in the wheels, every single force is part of this algorithm. And if you change any one part, it affects the entire control system. I do not make definitive statements that often, but I'm telling you right now, you cannot ride this bicycle. You might think you can, but you can't. I know this because I'm often asked to speak at universities and conferences, and I take the bike with me. It's always the same. People think they're going to try some trick or they're just going to power through it. It doesn't work. Your brain cannot handle this. For instance, this guy. I offered him $200 just to ride this bike 10 feet across the stage. Everybody thought he could do it.
No, you didn't understand. You didn't understand. So, this way. Alright, so, whenever you're ready, yeah?
Quick,
no, you have to keep your feet on. Dude, look, all right, let's see. Here we go. Just giving up. Like, you gotta start rolling at least. Go. And go. Oh, God! All right, back up. Okay, back up.
Keep your feet on the pedal. Go.
Start right off.
Just keep your feet on the pedal.
Tails on.
Yep, come on.
Once you have a rigid way of thinking in your head, sometimes you cannot change that, even if you want to. So here's what I did. It was a personal challenge. I stayed out here in this driveway and I practiced about 5 minutes every day. My neighbors made fun of me. I had many wrecks, but after 8 months, this happened. One day I couldn't ride the bike and the next day I could. It was like I could feel some kind of pathway in my brain that was now unlocked. It was really weird though. It's like there's this trail in my brain, but if I wasn't paying close enough attention to it, my brain would easily lose that neural path and jump back onto the old road it was more familiar with. Any small distractions at all, like a cell phone ringing in my pocket, would instantly throw my brain back to the old control algorithm and I would wreck. But at least I could ride it. My son is the closest person to me genetically, and he's been riding a normal bike for 3 years. That's over half his life. I wanted to know how long it would take him to learn how to ride a backwards bike, so I told him if he learned how to ride a backwards bike, he could go with me to Australia and meet a real astronaut.
Are you gonna give up?
No.
Go ahead. This is how it starts. Look at this. This is such a big deal. Get up, you got it. Did you see his brain get it? So he, in how many weeks have we been doing this? 2 weeks? In 2 weeks, he did something that took me 8 months to do, which demonstrates that a child has more neuroplasticity, am I even saying that right, than an adult.
It's clear from this experiment.
Okay, so it took him 8 months to be able to learn that new skill. He knew how to ride a bike, but then when you changed one dynamic of it, it took him 8 months. But you saw how neuroplastic that little boy was. He got it a lot sooner. But when they're having that trouble and that conflict, just understanding that it's like that, it took that man 8 months. So however long it takes you to make that groove and have a neuropathway, it's going to take longer to build a new one. So some powerful words that we can say are you didn't know the words to say or you didn't know what else to do. And this really changes the heart of our relationship with the child because it changes what their intent is when you come to them. And so just think, isn't that what we all want? If you come home and you've been Christmas shopping and then your husband comes to you and he sees the bill and he's like, hello, I thought we agreed on a budget, and now you went over. Did you buy one for you, one for them, for everything? And, you know, why can't we not stay on what we agreed on? And you immediately are going to get defensive, and you're going to ball up a little bit. But if he came and said, hey, I know you really wanted our family to have a good Christmas this year, and you didn't know what else to do, and so you ended up kind of buying more. So let's make a plan next time. Then you're going to be more receptive to his to what he's trying to teach you at that time or talk to you about at that time. So we all want that good, that positive intent, and to think that, have someone tell you that the place that you're coming from is not bad. You didn't know what to do. You didn't know what to say. This is a time of learning, and it's okay to make mistakes. And so those are some powerful words to remember to use. Proverbs, we've heard this verse, train up a child in the way he should go, and even when he was old, he will not depart from it. Luke talks about a disciple is not above his teacher, but everyone, when he is fully trained, will be like his teacher. And in 1 Timothy, have nothing to do with irreverent, silly myths, rather train yourself for godliness. So we see all throughout the Bible, from the Old Testament, Deuteronomy, all the way up through the New Testament, that it talks about training over and over and over. So we understand that that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to train our children, but how? So we're going to talk about some of the practical aspects of how to do that with them. But before we do, we're going to watch a little video that came out around, it's a commercial that came out around the Olympics a few years ago, and it just kind of shows what it may look like. This process is not necessarily going to be as easy as we talked about, but there's great fruit at the end of it.
Oh.
I love that video just because it shows that a lot of times it's okay if you have your little toddler and it's learning how to walk and it falls down, you're still so encouraging, like, you can do it, let's try again, hold my fingers. Or kid learning to read. I have 2 6-year-olds right now, so reading is a big deal in our house. And so when my son's sounding out a word and he doesn't get it, you know, I'm never angry at him for not understanding it. So we are very patient in a lot of learning those skills. But then when we come over to the social emotional world, sometimes we're not. We think, well, they should know this. I've told them this. And so I like that video. It just shows the process of learning. So training, we were going to train in biblical training, talking about learning the Bible and learning scripture and what to do. We're going to train them in obedience and how to act, what is right, in their character. We're going to teach them biblical character, in their actions, what we do at the dinner table, what we do when we're out and we meet someone for the first time, just all those different actions and other day-to-day areas. So those are all areas of life that we're going to provide training for our little ones. And so Lauren talked about the brain, and we're going to kind of hit on a few things of the best way that our brain processes. So for training, we want to make sure that they hear it, that they see it, and that they do it. And so our children think in pictures. They don't think in words like we do, so we want to use pictures, and we'll go over a few of those examples. But we also want to use less words. You know, sometimes as women, we tend to talk a lot. I don't know if y'all know that. No amens from the men out there. But if we can just get our words down a little bit, then that will help our children to be able to process what we're talking about and to understand and really pay attention. So just using less words with them as well will help. So often we say these things. How many of you have ever said any of this in your house? Stop running in the house. Quit biting your sister. That is enough whining. Don't speak to me like that. Stop yelling. No, no, no. So a lot of these are all things that we say as a parent all the time. Stop, don't hit, be quiet. We're always constantly using this. But when you think back to what I just said, if children think in pictures, then I want you to go ahead and, I know it's late and y'all are getting tired, go ahead and close your eyes for a moment. Don't be scared. And I want you to not think about when you get home tonight how you're going to put on your pajamas and you're going to sit on the couch and you're going to get a warm blanket and you're going to watch TV for a little while. Don't think about that. Okay, open your eyes. What were y'all thinking about? What I said. And so that thinking about knowing that we do that, we're painting a picture with our words all the time. What is a child going to picture in their head when you say stop running? Running. So they're going to have an image of their head of running. So we need to watch our words and think about wording it in a different way instead of what we don't want. And also, and we'll pursue that a little further in just a moment, but also we're leaving them with what not to do. We haven't given them an action to replace it. So when that happens, this is what you get sometimes. You tell them, don't draw on the wall. So they don't. They draw on the house. Or on their sibling, or on the baby, because you said don't draw on the wall. And so they're obeying. But so giving them, that little one, a pack of markers and saying, you may draw on the paper. The markers are for the paper. And you tell them exactly what you want, or otherwise, you'll get everything else because they're obeying you. They're not drawing on the wall. So that is important to remember, telling them what you want them to do and painting that image verbally in their mind, and then telling them exactly what they can do instead of what they can't do. So if you tell them to do it, they're going to. This is just a funny little 911 call of a child.
Yeah.
All right, what's your problem?
Okay.
she didn't tell him who to call, so he called somebody. So that's just important for us to remember, not to just leave them out there with what not to do, but what do you want to do when you need help? Obviously not call 911. So what do you want them to do? We're going to go over a few of these scenarios, and y'all feel free to pop up. Instead of stop kicking the chair, because you just painted a picture now of them kicking the chair, what could you say? Anybody feeling brave? Good. Yes. Keep your feet still. And you can use yourself as an example a lot. Keep your feet on the ground like this, or keep your feet still like this, and you let them see it as well. Instead of don't yell or don't whine, what can you say? Good. Yes. Make your voice be inside voice, or make your voice match mine. The other day, my daughter I was trying to get her to say yes, ma'am, but it turned into yes, ma'am, like every time. And I'd say yes, ma'am, and she had to do it like 15 times because that girl's got a will on her. But she finally made her voice match mine. But it's going to take that repetition over and over, and showing them. I had to show her exactly what I wanted her to say, not yes, ma'am, yes, ma'am, over and over. And take that out of your mouth. What can you say? Because they might take it out of their mouth, but then they might shove it in their brother's mouth. So what can you say? How about keep it on the table, or keep it in your lap, or keep it in the cup holder, wherever you want it to be, instead of just not in your mouth. Think about in an ideal world, where would I like that to be? Keep it on the table. Instead of be nice, don't tell people they can't play with you. What do you want them to do? Say, next time say, sure, we can all play together. Or, because being nice is very vague for them, so you want to tell them how to be nice. Say, yeah, you can play with us now, or I'm going to play with her for a moment, and then I'll come play with you. So you give them the words and exactly what you want them to do. So scientists are telling us that the brain needs to practice the expected behavior. So we think about football, and the football teams don't just go out and watch videos all week long and then go play the game on Sunday night, Monday night. I mean, there's football every night, isn't there? But they practice. They actually get on the field and they practice. So they watch the film, but then they go practice. And so that is what our children need too, not just for us to tell them, but then they get the time in real life to practice that behavior. So we want to let them practice it in a real world scenario and make sure it's a time of non-conflict. So when your child is having a meltdown on the floor, you don't bring them over and say, drag them over, you're going to come over here and practice shutting that door. You know, that's not the time. They're having a lot of adrenaline, a lot of hormones running through. They're having a fit. They can't learn anything new in that moment. Like if we're driving down the street and I'm talking to you and you have to throw on your brakes because someone pulls out in front of us, and I lean over at that moment and say, can you show me how to work my phone? You're going to hit me because you have adrenaline coursing through your body, and those same hormones are going through that little three-year-old's. So there's nothing we can teach them in that moment. We want to wait until there's not a time of conflict and practice the skill at least three times. Also, if they can see it in pictures, they think in pictures up to 8 or 9 years of age, so we want to use that and show them in pictures, letting them role play back and forth. My father-in-law is a pastor, and so when we go visit them, a lot of people will come up and say hi because they know about them, but my children hadn't met them before, and so we'd have to practice before we went in and say, people are going to come up to you, and they're going to say hi, and you may not know them, so you're going to shake their hand, you're going to say, it's nice to meet you, let's practice it. So we had to kind of role play those scenarios, so when they got there, they weren't just, you know, standing there blindly. And then they have to watch you model it in day-to-day life. So this is Lauren and Wesley, my nephew, when he was little bitty. Lauren be working from home, and of course, like every child, Wesley was really drawn to the technology, especially to her laptop, and she decided that that was off limits for him. And so she had to practice it with him. And notice when you watch this, that this isn't a time of conflict, and the repetition that they do. So I'm going to show this little video. Stop. Okay. So then later on, he would walk over and he would just look at it and just look at it and say, stop, before. So he understood that he wasn't supposed to do that. And that was how she trained him in that one aspect. And it might be, you know, an area of your limits, that area of your house that's off limits, or how you want them to pet the dog, anything like that, just practicing it with them over and over. Sorry. This is a video of a pastor friend of ours who lives in Houston, and we laugh a lot because when he was younger, he said he didn't want any kids at all. Now he has four, and he's an amazing dad, but he spends a lot of time on the front end, just kind of front-loading what he wants, and this is his oldest son, Colton, that you'll see, and he's going to talk about the dad aspect. We saw in that verse earlier about how fathers need to be involved in the discipline and the instruction and play a heavy role in that. And this is a great video to show how Nathan does that for his son.
Dads, when it comes to training your sons, giving them lots of training and shaping their hearts, the way that I think about it is that there is formal teaching and then there's real-time reinforcement. Formal teaching, real-time reinforcement. So the way that we do formal teaching is often in boy time.
I remember, for example,
when he was younger, and I wanted to teach him how to begin learning to interact with older men.
We'll try it and see
if
this works.
We got on our bicycles, and we went for a bike ride, and we found a bayou in our area, and we just went and sat by the bayou, and there on that concrete slope, we practiced how to interact with older men. So one of the things I taught him was how to have a conversation with older people so that he would not be one of those 7 or 8 year old boys out in public where a grown man talks to him and the child stares at them or says nothing. And so we sat there, and one of the ways I explained to Colton about interacting with older men is simple things, of course, like you look them in the eye, giving them lots of Dads, when it comes to training your sons, giving them lots of training and shaping their hearts, the way that I think about it is that there is formal teaching and then there's real-time reinforcement. Formal teaching, real-time reinforcement. So the way that we do formal teaching is often in boy time. So I remember, for example, when he was younger and I wanted to teach him how to begin learning to interact with older men, we got on our bicycles and we went for a bike ride and we found a bayou in our area and we just went and sat by the bayou and there on that concrete slope, we practiced how to interact with older men. So one of the things I taught him was how to have a conversation with older people so that he would not be one of those 7 or 8 year old boys out in public where a grown man talks to him and the child stares at them or says nothing. And so we sat there, and one of the ways I explained to Colton about interacting with older men is simple things, of course, like you look them in the eye, you speak very loudly, you answer when spoken to. But one of the things I did is I got a ball. We took a ball with us, and we kind of sat apart from each other, and we rolled the ball back and forth. And I taught him through that little activity that a conversation is like rolling the ball. And if you don't talk back, if you don't roll the ball back to the person, the conversation's over. You're being a ball hog and you've kept it. But as long as you keep rolling the ball back and forth, you can talk to big people. So we would practice stuff like that on that concrete slope at the bayou. I would be the big man he was going to run into in public, and he would be Colton. And we would just practice things like the big man saying, "Do you like school?" And Colton learning how to say things more like, "I guess." And I taught him how to ask questions back. "Yes, I do like school. Thank you. I like my teacher. How are you today?" And so through that formal teaching time, I taught him how to have conversations with big men. And then from then on, whenever we would go places in public and he didn't do that well, I wouldn't embarrass him in front of the man. You've got to protect their dignity at all costs. So I don't embarrass him in front of the person. But after the person's gone away in private, we just kind of do a little review session, a little debrief, and I'm like, "You nailed it," or "You didn't nail it. You got to keep doing it." And over time, he was fine, and so now he can do it. We would go and talk about handshakes, how to shake someone's hand. You grip them hard, look them in the eye. So training your son's heart is part formal training sessions and part regular reinforcement of their hearts. So dads, I would encourage you to think of it that way. It's really important that it becomes very normal for you and your son to have these formal teaching times and then to have reinforcement. One example of why it's really important to establish with your son formal teaching times is, for example, when I had to give Colton the sex talk. came the time where, because he's in public school, even at his age, he started learning more and more about sex. And of course, as his dad, I wanted him to learn it from me. And so it was very normal for us that Sunday afternoon after lunch to go get in my truck and drive to McDonald's and get a milkshake and go sit in the parking lot at one of the local high schools and to sit there drinking milkshakes and for me to just break the news to him. And I just explained everything to you about sex and men and women and how it all works and what lust is and the proper way to look at women and think about women. And so it wasn't awkward for us to have that conversation because it was already natural in our relationship to have formal teaching times. And then I just get to reinforce that. When we see examples in public of ladies that don't look like biblical ladies, that don't dress like biblical ladies, we get to talk about that. Or we see men not treating women properly, we get to talk about that. So that's just one example of why having established formal teaching times in your relationship is really important, because those key moments are really going to come where you need your son to be willing to embrace those moments so that he can learn.
And Nathan does such a great job about that, because you want them to have a biblical worldview, but you want them to get their worldview too through you and not through another six-year-old or another eight-year-old or someone on the bus. And so I love that he's very proactive about that and saying, this may come up, you may hear this at school, and when you do, this is what's true. And so being proactive and just thinking through what goes on in their little world every day and what challenges do you think may come up and how can we prepare them for that and kind of role play it before it actually comes up. And so kind of the words that they may hear, the concepts that they may come across, and preparing their hearts and minds for that so that they have a biblical worldview before they're confronted with it and hear what another 10-year-old thinks about the subject. So some real-life examples for this are a child keeps whining, more juice, more juice. And so what we want to do is tell them what we want. So you can say, more juice, please, and make their voice match yours as well. And when a child's interrupting, when you're trying to talk to your spouse or a neighbor, and they are pulling on you and talking and you're interrupting what you're trying to do, you can practice before. This is one of those things that you know is probably going to happen. They're probably going to need you at some point when you're talking to someone else. And so preparing them beforehand and say, when you need me, you put your hand on me, and when I'm ready to talk to you, when I'm done and have a break, then I will ask you what you need. So practice it now. Or if they come over and they start pulling, grab their little hand and put it on you and say, you may wait right here. And then, so they already know, they have a cue, you have a system worked out, and they understand what they can do when they want you. Or your child looks at you and says, no. And what we want to do is say, no, you will never talk to me like that again. And so you want to tell them what they can do. Say, you may not tell me no. You may say, I don't want to, but I will obey. Let's practice it. And they say it all over and over. I don't want to, but I will obey. And that's not to say that you're going to have this conversation with them and you're going to give them the words and that they're going to do it and you're all going to skip off and have a great day. We're parents, so we know that that's not always how it's going to go down in the real world. So let's say you say, you're going to say, yes, ma'am, I don't want to, but I will obey. And they hit the floor in a fit. So then what do you do at that point? Well, like I said before, we can't teach them in that moment, in that brain state, so we're going to wait. We're going to let them get over it. We're going to show empathy. We're going to be there for them. And then when they've come up to a higher center of your brain, you're going to go back and reteach that skill. You may not talk to be that way. Even though it's hard to obey, you're going to say, yes, ma'am, let's practice it. Okay, now let's do it again. So you go back. So when the real world happens and they don't always respond exactly how we would love for them to do, you let it calm down and then you go back and reteach. If you say it's time to clean up and the child says, no, I don't want to, you can say, yes, you may say, yes, ma'am, or you may pick up these toys or these toys first. You need to make a choice, but you're showing them exactly what you want them to do. So in this, it's important you can set the limit. Say you may not, let's say you have a hitter, you may not hit. Hitting hurts. If you want a toy, then you say, may I have a turn? Practice it now. So you're giving them the words and the action and practicing it. But then we want to celebrate when they do it right. Like Lauren did in that video, you did it, you said stop. So you encourage them and say, wow, you showed kindness. You said, may I have a turn? And that's going to encourage them next time to go do choose the positive behavior. Because if you're creating those neural pathways, just because you've laid a new neural pathway in their brain doesn't mean that that's the one they have to take. All it means is now they have a choice. Before, they had no choice. This little girl had no choice. She wanted something, she hit, and that's all she knew. But now you've laid a new neural pathway, and she can choose to come over and say, "May I have a turn?" So you want to celebrate with her when she chooses the right neural pathway at that point and makes a good choice. So we talked about how you want to hear it, and that's a lot of what we just talked about. And now you want to see it. So we know that they think in pictures, and that's really, really important to use that for their credit. I'm going to come back to this in just one second. So one way that this worked for us is, like I said, I had twins. I still do. I have twins. And when they were about two, we decided to separate them into different rooms. My son was really wanting that. And the great thing about twins is you make all your mistakes on two children at one time. And so that's exactly what we did. We separated them. My son loved it. He was just so excited about his own space, his own bed. And my daughter hated it. And when I say hate, I mean, like, she hated it. And so I would try to even move her back in there. And it was just, we had already rocked the ship too much. She was just not having it. So bedtime was awful for a while. So I was talking to my mother-in-law one night, and I was like, "Oh, I'm dreading bedtime again. What else can we do?" And she was like, "Well, have you made her a picture book?" And I was like, "I was hoping you would say Benadryl, but no, I guess I'll go ahead and try that." So we made her this little book, and this was for personal use only. I never would have chosen to put myself in a robe on front of people, but this was like made for our house. So at first it was just all the way up to my son in bed. The last two pictures weren't there. So we would read it every night before, we'd read it throughout the day, and we'd read it before bed and say, "You're going to take a bath tonight, then we're going to brush our, we're going to put on our pajamas and brush our teeth and read the Bible, we're going to say our prayers, and then it's going to be time for bed." And I'd be like, "Isn't that great?" And then she'd lay down in her bed and scream her head off. So this went on for another week and a half, and I was like, "This is not working." And then we realized she was fine all up through those steps. She had no problem taking a bath, brushing her teeth. All of that was great. It was when she got in bed because, you know, all they know is what they see. So when I turned off that light at night and left her room, for all she knew, I was going to Hawaii every night. Like, she had no idea. And so we added these last two pictures and said, "Daddy may be on the computer, Mommy may be on the computer, or watching TV, but that is where we are, and you're safe." And that's how we would end it every night before we walked out. Well, then she could lay back there in her little bed and have an image of where we were. She had an image of me on the couch or Stephen on the computer, and it calmed her fears. Because before, she had no idea where we are or what we're doing. And still to this day, this is 4 years later, she'll ask me, "What are you going to do?" And I'll say, "Well, I'm going to shower. I'm going to go work and on the couch." And then she's like, "Okay." And she goes to bed just fine. But she still likes to know where we're going to be. So we can use pictures to kind of solve or soothe some of those lower centers of their brain when they're triggered and those fears come out and they're emotional. Pictures can really help with that. If you have a little one that has a really hard time being dropped off at church or being dropped off for a babysitter or daycare or whatever, if you make a little book like this, if pictures of what you're doing throughout the day and what they're going to do, it really helps them to not miss you as much or to understand that you're coming back and that just because they can't see you right now doesn't mean you're gone forever. So pictures really help with that. Even putting your day in a daily schedule with pictures helps to soothe all of those lower centers of their brain and solve a lot of the questions where, and that's where some of the behavior can flare up from, is a lot of the unknown. So if we can use pictures in that way, it's very helpful. Okay, so when Lauren and I were trying to teach our kids biblical principles, we were both teachers, and we were used to having manipulatives. You know, as a teacher, you want to teach about the alphabet, you have little magnetic letters, you want to teach about counting, you have little bears. So then we would try to teach them social-emotional skills, and there was nothing visual that we could kind of put in their hands. And when you're telling a little one if you tell a little one, let's see, pick up your shoe. Well, they can pick up their shoe. Or show me a fork. They can show you a fork. But then when you say, show me kindness, Well, that's really hard for a little one because you can't pick it up and you can't hold it, and you have to put an image to it for them. And so we came up with the Fruit Project, and these little cards just help us. It goes through all the fruits of the Spirit, and it has images of what that is. So let's see. This one is, let's do self-control. So it has little pictures of what self-control is, and it has scriptures and Bible stories on the back, but it also has discussion questions. Like, this little girl wants to eat a cookie, and her mom is saying, wait until after lunch. She's using self-control by quietly waiting. What does quietly waiting look like? And so it shows the little picture. Her hands are in her lap, and she is waiting quietly. And then it'll have a scenario of, this child is angry. Look at the boy's face. How do you think he's feeling? He's taking a deep breath, and he's praying. He's using self-control. So even though he felt anger, he calmed himself down. He used self-control in that moment. So putting it to pictures, and this was just because we didn't have anything else. If even just taking pictures of them would help so that they can see, oh, reporting it out through the day. As you're walking through and someone drops something and your little one picks it up and hands it to him, saying, wow, that's helpfulness. You just showed helpfulness to them, or that's kindness or goodness when you did that. That, and it puts a name to the action. So using just everyday experiences will help them. Well, as we were trying to teach the emotions, we realized that we wanted to teach them what to do when the emotions came, because they're going to come all throughout our lives, whether you're 2 or whether you're 102, you're going to have upset, you're going to have something that doesn't go your way every day. A funny story is, about a year ago, I was driving down I-30 in Dallas, and this lady was merging as I was on the far lane, and she was coming right over to me, so I kind of tapped my horn a little bit to say, like, hold on, and I wasn't trying to start a fight, but she got really mad at me, and she zoomed in front of me and rolled down her window, so I was like, oh no, and then all of a sudden, a box of fried chicken flew out the window and hit my windshield, and I was shocked that this grown lady had thrown fried chicken at me. But what we want to do is start now when they're little to teach them what to do when they're angry and when they're triggered, so that they're not 40 years old throwing fried chicken on I-30. And so it starts when they're little bitty, understanding what to do when they have that emotion. And so we came up with the idea of the rock cards, and it stands for Resting on Christ the King. And we have a place in our house called the Rock. And it's a physical place where we go, where we say, some of you may have seen the War Room, where she had a prayer closet. And it's kind of the same concept, is it's a place where you go to kind of help process the emotion. And it has different emotions, anxious, angry, sad, even happy. And it tells you in pictures what to do. So these were helpful for us when, like I said earlier, I said when we separated my twins in their rooms, it was hard. Well, another hard time was when they went to kindergarten and they were in separate classrooms for the first time. So my daughter started struggling. So we got this out, and I said, that feeling that you feel in your stomach when you go to a different room than Drew, that's anxious. You're feeling anxious because you're away from him. So what the Bible says is, and we went through this verse about not to be anxious about anything, but prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, make your requests known to God, and then talks about guarding your heart and minds in Jesus. So I would show her this and say, you're going to pray all those worries about being alone or being away from him, you're going to pray, and then we're going to guard your heart and mind with Christ Jesus. So we're going to think about some good things, some truth, and we picked out like 3 things, like that God is always with you, that you'll see Drew at recess, and that mom's picking you up. And those are true. So that's what you're going to think about when the worries come. You're going to pray, and then these are the things you're going to think about. Well, it took about 10 days, and the whole time I'm thinking, I ruined my kid, ruined her, separated her, now she hates life. And finally, day 10, she comes, and she says, Mom, I had a great day today. I wasn't anxious at all. I asked someone to play. And so ever since that, now it's like a second home to her. She's happy. She loves school. But she had to go through that experience. And I couldn't take it away from her. I couldn't rescue her from that. I had to let her go through it as a little 5-year-old to depend on the Lord, so that now when she's older, she'll still have a reference where she can look back and say, I remember that the Lord helped me when I was feeling anxious, or when I was scared. There's different verses about fear, but the pictures really help them to understand what to do when these emotions come, because they will. So this is Karis, my daughter, talking about one of the fruit cards. On the back of the fruit card, it has a plan for how they're going to show that fruit, because also we want to practice it. So we're showing it in pictures. We're talking about the biblical concepts, but we want to see them practice it. And so this is her. She's making a plan because we just talked about the kindness card.
Kindness is help. Is a little girl helping a boy when he's hurt, taking cookies to the fire station, staying with a little boy while he's sick. Today I'm going to show kindness by helping my brother clean his room.
Okay, so she chose a way that she was going to show kindness, and that's just how we live at my house. You know, we just make these plans and we help people. No, I'm just kidding. I have no idea if she even did that day I left town. So, but it was great for her to have a plan of how she's going to do it. And then we check in later on and say, you know, you mentioned that you wanted to help Drew clean his room to show kindness. How did that go? And if it didn't, just like Nathan said, we don't want to shame them. We just say, okay, well, we'll try for that tomorrow. And kind of encourage them. If they did, then we want to celebrate it. We really want to celebrate all the great things that they do, all the times that they're showing the fruits of the Spirit. And you can do it many different ways. You can show it visually in your home if you want. There's the kindness tree there. You can put just post-it notes, write it down that Kara showed kindness by helping Drew pick up his toys. You could have a journal. But before you go to bed at night, you could take some time and just look through and say, wow, look, Drew was faithful today when he reminded us to pray before dinner. Karis showed goodness when she picked up the toys without being asked. And you just celebrate these things with them so that they're able to put a vision and an action to what that fruit of the Spirit is. And you can say just like this. You helped Emma pick up her crayons when she spilled them. You showed kindness. So you're describing what the action was and then attributing the fruit to it. You waited patiently in line. You were using self-control. You're on time every morning for school or when we need to leave for school. So you are so faithful. So as we go throughout the day, we're just noticing these little bits every time and just celebrating that with them. And that what we focus on, we're going to get more of. So you'll notice as you start pointing out different fruits of the Spirit it can, in their lives, but also around you, then you're going to start getting more of that from them and start seeing more fruit. So just keeping in mind what our ultimate goal in parenting is, like I said before, is to point them to the Lord, is to give them a biblical worldview and train them for righteousness, just like Deuteronomy said. And we know as we do this that it's not always going to be easy, that there are going to be hard times, that there are going to be times that you feel like you're talking and no one's listening. And so I just want to encourage you that the work you're doing is eternal. I heard a story, some of you might have heard, that this lady was a mom of four, and she was having just a rough time. She was having a bad day. She had gone in and told the kids to turn off the TV and no one looked at her. She had asked her husband something and he hadn't responded, and she was just tired. And so she was going to meet some friends for dinner after the kids went to bed, and she put on an old dress and like put her dirty hair up and went. And as she was sitting there, this lady was talking about this great trip to Europe she had just been on and how wonderful it was, and she was just kind of sitting there listening. And her friend looked over and said, "And I got this for you." And she handed her a book of cathedrals, and she was like, "Oh, well, thank you." So as she started looking through it, it was talking about how these cathedrals were made. And these men devoted their whole life to go and build these cathedrals. And at the time, they never saw it finished. They never saw the finished work of what they were doing every day. And there were stories in there of men carving ornate, beautiful birds into a high beam that no one was really going to see. And when she closed the book, she flipped over the cover again, and her friend had written in there to her, to all the cathedrals that you're building in your life. So that's what we're doing. We may think a lot of times that the work that we're doing is not making a difference. but you're building something beautiful into the hearts of your children with what you're doing every day for them.